avoid its meaning. But we know they have all kinds of inventions, that the eye of the needle does really mean a needle at all. It means the wall in the eye of Jerusalem, which was a very small gate there, and they called that the eye of the needle. Could be. But the apostles, who spoke the same language that Jesus spoke, understood it very literally, because they said to him in objection, well, then who could be saved? And Jesus' only reassurance was, well, all things are possible in the sight of God. Now, there are rich people who are poor in spirit, I believe. There was a series of articles in the National Catholic Reporter not long ago about rich American Catholics and how they use their money with beneficence. I would suppose it's all true, and I hope it is. I don't know. Millionaires. I do know in the life of Elizabeth Ann Seton, now St. Elizabeth Seton, that she was introduced into the Catholic Church and into Christianity, and to a very thorough and radical Christianity, by two millionaire bankers, the Felici brothers. They were the human instruments that God used in bringing her into the Church. They were contemporaries of George Washington. They were vastly rich bankers at that time. They were friends of her husband, Seton, who was a shipbuilder and a ship owner. He was a rich man. And she went with them and visited them in Italy, and became friendly with them. And that's where her husband died, and they befriended her. So, in reading the life of Elizabeth Ann Seton, I was more edified, if possible, by their lives than by her lives. They and their wives, they really lived lives of poverty in spirit. So that is what is meant by poverty in spirit. It means a reduction of one's desires. They have to practice the same detachment, the same desirelessness. And so it's difficult to do. Well, now this is the change of values. Now let's take a look at them in St. Luke. He says, blessed are you poor. The kingdom, the reign of God, there it is, there's that variation again, take your pick. The kingdom of God is yours. They're the first words of Luke 2. This is how we enter the kingdom of God, by getting rid of all the desire for riches. That doesn't mean you get rid of all poverty, although some Christians, like a St. Francis, will go as far as that. And a Gandhi will reduce himself to utter nakedness, or just short of nakedness, to be poor of spirit. But it means that our desires, our affections, are not to be engaged or cling to riches or the effects of riches. Gandhi, all he had were a couple of pairs of sandals, his loincloth, and a dollar watch. He had no books. He had no library. He had no bar. He had no cuisine. He had nothing. That was the way he lived, stricter even than St. Francis, who at least provided himself with wine, and his brothers. Of course, they didn't even have water then, I guess. And so this was absolute poverty. And this is what Jesus said. So Jesus is here pronouncing a judgment on the rich, as well as giving us instruction. The kingdom of God is yours. We want to get on that kingdom highway? There it is. And this is why down through the centuries, many people have taken the vow of poverty and give up their riches. But even the vow of poverty sometimes become legalistic, and it's interpreted very lightly and superficially. Even for a religious who has a vow of poverty, the most important part of their poverty is the spirit of poverty, the lack of desire, the struggle, the elimination of desire for the things that money can buy. A religious can be worldly-minded and therefore be, without having a dime, can be worldly-minded and therefore rich in spirit. St. Francis de Sales, who was a bishop, in his little book, The Introduction to Devout Life, makes this distinction very clear. It's poor in spirit, utterly detached, without desire. That is what is required here. Now, St. Luke then turns around and he gives us the negative of it, too. See, the positive and the negative go together. Woe to you who are rich. We don't find this at all in St. Matthew. Woe to you who are rich, for your consolation is now. In St. Luke, I'd like you to advert to that word now, too. That's very critically important. St. Luke is distinguishing here not merely two kinds of value, he is distinguishing for us two levels of value, on the natural plane and on the level of the Spirit. Now, you have your consolation now, you rich. You have the things of this world, that's what you wanted, that's what you've got. Be satisfied. It's going to come to an end shortly. You see? And this runs through St. Luke. This change of tense here, the future, it means now you shall be satisfied. Woe to you who are filled. You shall go hungry, he says. Now that doesn't mean just in the future. This is again a symbolic word, a rhetorical word, an image word. It means two levels of value. If I fill myself with the good things of this world now, then I will be empty in the kingdom of heaven. Automatically empty. And we can fill ourselves now with the things of God. Now the second one in St. Luke. No, I guess we better stop and we'll come back to the second one this afternoon. We'll go down now, for lunch is 11:45 and we have to be on time. So we'll give up our preoccupation with the things of the Spirit and go down to the things of the flesh. With us. With our minds still on the things of the Spirit. So God bless you.